This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Now then, you're very welcome along. So Wednesday night rugby this evening has Matt Williams and then Chris Jones, BBC's rugby correspondent. Never really spoken to Chris much on the show before, but we wanted to get a few outside voices on the lines being announced tomorrow. Dan McDonald joins us on the football show. Also with us after nine, Áine O'Gorman on the women's Champions League final between Chelsea and Barcelona in Gothenburg, May 16th, semi-finals at the weekend. Can the Chelsea men join their female counterparts? We will find out this evening. They have Real Madrid at Stamford Bridge. Philippe Auclair will join us this hour to preview and, I'm sure, cast an eye back on Man City PSG last night. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. We have Richie McCormack as ever. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Thanks for coming in, Joe.
So what's happening? What's going on, Adrian Barry? Did you watch the game last night?
I did. I was, I don't know what you call it, dual screening. I was listening to your chat with Micheál Martin on the OTB Sports app. Download it now at your app store. Great app. While watching the game in the background. Both were a good experience, Joe. I enjoyed both. Just trying to figure out which was more entertaining. Both were good. It was an unusual partnership. But yeah.
Okay.
what am I trying to say? The game was good. City were very impressive. You think about you'll want to double back to I know you'll want to double back to Micheál Martin shortly, so we can definitely do that.
No, I don't.
That was a facetious point. The game was good. Look at I was actually looking at the table earlier on today. The market where, like, City particularly have come from, obviously, over the last number of months. Both their story and Chelsea's story this season is pretty incredible. I think City, I know that people say, like, you know, Pep has spent, what was it, the thing today I'd seen, he spent over £1 billion. Mm. Isn't it amazing how somebody who spent £1 billion over the last 10 years has finally managed to get to a Champions League final or whatever. But, like, I mean, the evidence of the Premier League table in Christmas week gone was that both City and Chelsea were on 26 points in the Premier League table and struggling big time, sixth and eighth. And as I said, City particularly, given that, like, obviously Chelsea solved everything by swapping in a new manager, and that was the fix for that. But I think that City's achievement was almost more impressive in that, like, Pep obviously has devised a slightly new way of playing, and they obviously stick with their manager. I'm not saying that, like, they're doing a Leicester City on it. They've obviously spent a lot of money, but it is impressive that the evidence was there. They'd been beaten by Spurs and maybe Leicester City up to that point. So they were obviously not going the way they would have wanted. And you just look at how dominant they've been in the Premier League since then, about to get back into a Champions League final. I just think what he's done to turn it around has been exceptional. And like the great in the game last night, like a team like PSG, and I know they have their shortcomings, and some of them, like maybe the biggest one is their attitude, but like all they were reduced last night was kicking all around them in the end. It was actually quite pathetic, I thought, from PSG's point in the end.
Yeah, so what was that about? They seemed to lose the plot.
They felt, and it certainly looked, it felt like it looking at it, that the game was done. Like, it had a bit of the, to be honest, Leinster's against La Rochelle at the weekend from a long way out. Even though it wasn't beyond them on the scoreboard, they were clearly, I entertained the notion for a minute that maybe if PSG get one back, that possibly they'd get a better foothold in the game here. But even that, it just felt so unlikely. Did they register a shot on target? I know the commentator said at one point that Neymar had a wild fling on goal with a late free kick, and the suggestion was that he was just trying to get something on target because he knew that there hadn't been anything up to that point. But they were just lashing out. How Verratti managed to stay on the pitch at the end and itself was, and he wasn't alone, by the way, it was a minor miracle. They were pathetic.
Mm. And they started so well, Rich. I thought in the first 45 minutes of these two legs, they were brilliant. The subsequent three quarters, not so good, but they totally lost the plot last night. Like, Di Maria sending off is just an embarrassment.
Di Maria sending off was very silly, like ridiculous, the nature in which he lashed out. There is maybe something behind it. I know after the game, Ander Herrera was speaking to RMC TV in France, and he was saying that Bjorn Kuipers, the referee, had been pretty profane in his language towards certain PSG players, namely the aforementioned Marco Verratti and also Leandro Paredes, that Kuipers had told both players in different instances to F off. Mm. Quite how they took that, I don't know if that was the genesis of their kind of, you know, awful tempers last night, but, you know, them being outplayed and outshone by a Manchester City side last night, I think, was probably key to it. And there is, like, the same attitude problem remains for PSG. I mean, they're not necessarily the flat-track bullies they were, because France has been closer this year, obviously, enough in Ligue 1. But Mauricio Pochettino has, you know, a definite attitude problem to manage there, because they do go into these games with a sense that we should be winning this. We are talented enough to be winning this. And you could argue that in a couple of positions, they are lacking compared to someone like Manchester City or Real Madrid, or possibly even if you want to go to a Barcelona. But there is an attitude problem there that you could probably point towards being born out of one or two players in particular. That means that they'll never get over the line in terms of winning the Champions League. And you know, semi-final and final in a COVID year is probably going to be the best that they're going to hope for and achieve. And the clock's ticking on the likes of Neymar now. Mbappe, whether or not he'll stay, I mean, his agent again has been kind of doing the rounds around Europe and potentially shopping him to different suitors. Neymar is not getting any younger now at this stage. Angel Di Maria isn't the player that he might have necessarily been in previous years. And again, last night we saw his shortcomings. And that midfield is ticking on too. There's a definite regeneration job needed by Mauricio Pochettino, and he needs the right mentality of player in there. And, you know, he might come looking for one of the players on show tonight, which we'll get to in a moment.
Okay, well, let's get there, because there's actually lots going on, as even aside from Champions League. So the news round and Off the Ball News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Team news in.
Yeah, Chelsea tonight aiming to make this month's Champions League final an all Premier League affair. They tied at a goal apiece with Real Madrid ahead of the second leg of their semi-final at Stamford Bridge. For Chelsea, Edouard Mendy starts in goal, a back three then of Andreas Christensen, Thiago Silva and Antonio Rudiger. It's Cesar Azpilicueta and Ben Chilwell providing the width, with N'Golo Kante and Jorginho in midfield. Kai Havertz and Mason Mount then are in support of Timo Werner up front. For Real Madrid, a couple of experienced returnees to their side tonight. Thibaut Courtois is in goal for them. They revert to a back four with Nacho at right full and Adrian Militao partnered by the returning Sergio Ramos in the centre of defence. Ferland Mendy operates on the left. They've then got the experienced midfield trio of Casemiro, Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, with Vinicius Jr. and former Chelsea man Eden Hazard returning to the starting 11 up front alongside Karim Benzema. Chelsea boss Thomas Tuchel says Kante tonight will be key to their potential progress.
I mean, the guy is, it's the top guy. And he is the guy you need to win trophies, obviously, and that's why we are so happy that he's here and that he's in our club. I was dreaming about this player, fighting for this player, dreaming about this player in any club I was coaching. So now he's my player, and as you mentioned it, he won any trophy except for Champions League. Hopefully, he will do everything that we get this trophy, and. For me, he's an example, and he's an unbelievable input for any team in the world. And we are so happy that he plays for us. He is key, and he will be key tomorrow. And I hope in the best way possible.
Yeah, he was brilliant. I thought in the first leg, so good. Back to his very best. I know he was looking not finished at the start of the season, but just like a bit of decline had set in, and then. There were injuries, and I think Lampard was playing him out on the right-hand side at one point, which is just not his best position, but he is back with a bang under Tuchel. We have Philippe Auclair coming on around 7:30. A couple of French angles to this game this evening. The debate in Zidane rages. Julien Lorraine, French journalist, was on BBC giving out about the fact that Zidane really doesn't get any credit. You know, three Champions Leagues, two La Ligas, 13 of 14 European knockout ties won. If he wins this evening, it's his fourth final. Only Alex Ferguson, Carlo Ancelotti and Marcello Lippi, full stop, have reached four European Cup finals. So I'm curious for Philippe's take on Zidane and the French perspective on Zidane. And then the other thing which blew up this week, I suppose, is that Arsene Wenger is on the campaign trail to have Karim Benzema reinstated to the French squad. This has been going on for a long time. Karim Benzema, it's been announced now, he's finally going to face trial in October for his alleged, and it is alleged, involvement in an attempt to blackmail his former French teammate, Mathieu Valbuena, who'd been caught up in an intimate type tape situation, and Benzema was kind of a go-between between him and the blackmailers. And Benzema said, it's absurd, I'm innocent, this has been a masquerade, this whole thing. But I mean, this got so big in France, the Prime Minister at the time came out and said he shouldn't be involved in the national team, and he hasn't been ever since. And now 6 years on, Wenger is saying this is a non-sport problem, he needs to be reinstated. So I think Philippe could be interested in those two things. And of course, the game itself, Adrian, the game itself is beautifully poised.
Yeah, it's an unusual stance for Wenger, isn't it? Quite unusual in that it's very difficult to know unless you're one of the parties involved as to exactly what's going on there. The Zidane question itself is a fascinating one, and people are so divided on his ability. It'd be lovely to see him go on some level on a like a Jose Mourinho style run around clubs of Europe, wouldn't it, to actually get a good sense of, because the detractors say that you know, he spent so much money at a club like that, and you know, anybody could do that. But like, I mean, the stat that you gave earlier on about the comparison with Fergie, like, and the point that I was making earlier about, despite all the money that's spent at Manchester City, it is possible to F it up. Like, it's not an open goal. You've got to go and manage that talent. Yeah, look, I don't know. I feel that the people who are entrenched in either camp will continue to make their points no matter what happens. Like, if Madrid go on to win the Champions League comprehensively, people will still say, well, sure, that's just what he should have done. So it's hard to get any credit the longer he's at Madrid. But, yeah, I don't know. It feels like he doesn't have the cut of a Mourinho about him. Like, he's such a... I don't know. It doesn't feel like Zidane, like Mourinho, so tied up, obviously, with being a manager. It doesn't feel like Zidane maybe is in that same mold. But interesting tonight, Pulisic not been selected, haven't been so good in the first leg is interesting. Hazard obviously coming back, gets injured probably 3 minutes in, and have to make some sort of a substitution. Yeah, I don't know. I big fan of how would you not be with what Tuchel has done at Chelsea. It does feel that, like, with every passing week, by and large, that you know, his as well as he's doing doesn't make it that easy for Frank Lampard to get back into management anytime soon.
No, I do wonder if Man City would prefer Real Madrid, strange as that is. Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final were very focused, very well organised, very difficult. I think
they found out.
I think there's something brewing there under Tuchel. I've thought that for a couple of weeks now. It looks really good. June 7th, Rich, we might skip ahead.
Yeah, inter-county minor and under 20 players can resume training on Monday. It's been confirmed. Matches in those age grades will be permitted from June 7th, as you mentioned. The Central Competitions Control Committee will publish its fixture list for those minor and under 20 championships in the coming days. Similarly, the FAI has confirmed today that all players at all levels of football in the country can engage in full contact outdoor training in pods of 15 from Monday.
I guess it's part of the general movement towards good times ahead, hopefully very, very soon. Now, Solskjaer gave a press conference. Obviously, they play Roma tomorrow. This is the first time he's spoken since Sunday's game was abandoned.
Yeah, Manchester United's postponed Premier League game with Liverpool has been rearranged for next Thursday. Sunday's match called off, of course, after around 200 United fans broke into Old Trafford to protest against the club's owners, the Glazer family. Thousands also gathered outside the stadium and at the team hotel. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side will now play three times in 5 days. They'll also meet Aston Villa this Sunday and Leicester next Tuesday. There'll be just 50 hours between the games against Leicester and Liverpool. And speaking ahead of tomorrow's Europa League semi-final second leg with Roma, Solskjaer says Sunday's protests went too far.
It was a difficult day for us. Of course, we wanted to play. We wanted to beat Liverpool for the fans, even because our job has to be on getting good performances, good results on the pitch. That's the players' focus. That's my focus. But as I've said, as I said before the game, we have to listen. We have to hear the fans' voice. It has to be it's everyone's right to protest. It has to be in a civilized manner, though. It has to be in a peaceful manner. And unfortunately, when you break in, when police officers get injured, scarred for life, that's too far. That's one step too far. And unfortunately, that is Now, when it gets out of hand like this, it's a police matter. It's not about showing your opinions anymore.
Interesting. Pretty strong line, in fairness to him. He is walking a line, obviously. He's got his employers to his left and he's got the fan base who he needs on board to his right, Adrian.
Yeah, I was interested actually to hear, because I hadn't heard the comments, and I actually thought, maybe a bit like you were hinting there, Joe, that he might, because he is quite, he's a player's guy and he's a fan's guy, obviously, but that was probably as strong as you're going to get from Solskjaer. And I wondered, as he was chatting, about how much, like, does he call Ferguson on a week like this and go, geez, I'm not sure, I don't know what to say here, it's because it is a bit of a lose-lose situation almost for him in some regards, and he's got to be, he can't really, in his position, come out and kind of endorse what the fans were doing, can he?
No.
It's easier for Gary Neville, but yeah, I wondered. I do wonder how much there is increasingly a cut of the Fergie about him. I wonder how much of that is actually coming from the man himself.
Chippy says, you know what? I love a ref telling the players to F off. Maybe not a great look if it's picked up in ref mic, but the idea of the players getting the verbals from the referee is beautiful. Nigel Owen's more subtle, but a lot of his comments ultimately amount to F off. I don't really mind the ref throwing the odd F off to the players if they're on his case, Richie.
Standing his ground, I think, is probably the best. Like, Nigel Owens is probably a really good example, because he can be, I guess, quite cutting in what he'll say to the players in terms of if they are giving him lip or if they are stepping over the line a little bit. He'll say something to just take the legs from underneath them without resorting to the effing and jeffing, as it were. But, like, yeah, like, the basic point is true. There should be no issue with the referee giving a little bit of something back to the players, because, by God, it's not just a case that just because they take it. I mean, it's a normal human interaction, that if somebody does have a go at you, you're going to have something of an equivalent to give back to them. And just once it doesn't overstep the mark of being ridiculous or being pantomime stuff, we could probably point to a couple of officials who engage in that.
Nigel is fond of some rugby superiority, though, Adrian. This isn't football. Yeah. This isn't soccer, lads. This is rugby.
What? One option would be, of course, for everybody to stop doing it. Like,
oh well, yes.
I do think if it's going one direction, then you're, as in the players abusing officials, then it's legitimate for them to abuse back. I don't think you can have it both ways.
No.
Because there was the, I can't remember now, was it the Serbia game, the Ireland-Serbia game? Ireland had a contentious penalty decision that later proved as if it should have been a penalty, and Callum Robinson was...
The Aaron Connolly one, yeah.
Aaron Connolly. Was that Serbia, Richard? Was it Serbia?
Yeah, it was against Serbia, yeah. Connolly was fell in the box that looked all ends up,
And Robinson was, like, giving it the big one to the referee, saying, listen, that's a pen. Can you check VAR? Have we got VAR? And the referee says, F your VAR, which I thought was that was quite humorous. It was picked up by somebody who was shooting something for TikTok behind the goal. But, yeah, it sounds slightly ridiculous, but ideally everybody would stop abusing each other.
Don't be ridiculous. We've had the European Super League. Super Golf is trying to get off the ground. Rory McIlroy coming in very strongly against it, Richie.
Yeah, he's called proposals for the $1 billion Super Golf League as a money grab. Players, including world number one Dustin Johnson and Justin Rose, have reportedly been approached about the project. The PGA Tour, meanwhile, has threatened to ban anyone who signs up. And McIlroy thinks that's the correct stance.
If I were in charge of the PGA Tour, I would do the same thing. I mean, it's just, look, you saw what happened last week in the UK and in Europe with the European Super League. The top, 12 clubs got together and said, let's keep more of the money for ourselves. And, people didn't like that. That's not, it affects competition. It affects the integrity of competition. And, I just can't see how it works. As I said at the start, I think the model that the PGA Tour and the European Tour have, I don't think there's a better model for the game of golf, because it gives gives everyone an opportunity to go out there and have a great week and change their lives. I mean, the possibility that people, if they do go in that direction, can't play in the biggest tournaments in the game. And, the game of golf, whether it's a right thing or a wrong thing, is so about history and so about, we still talk about Gene Sarazen and Walter Hagen and Ben Hogan and all those guys, because that's what this game is. It's steeped in history and the legacies that those guys have. And if you move further away from that, you're basically losing the essence of what competitive golf is. So again, that's my stance on it, and that's been my stance for a long time. And I just can't see how it happens.
Interesting. This all blew up a while back, and McIlroy was very, very strong against it. I'm not sure why it's blown up again. Maybe just because the tours have come out and said that they're going to ban anyone who leaves. Is that the reason?
The pandemic basically put it on hold. If you look at the dates that it was basically thrown up last year, it was February of last year.
Yeah.
When the idea was again, sorry, pardon me. McIlroy had originally said he was approached in 2014 about something similar. I don't know if it's the exact same one, but this one group had decided to put together, I think it was a package of 48 tour players. They were going to approach 48 players. They were going to have an 18-event tour, 10 of which they said was going to be based in the United States. And the pandemic, I would imagine, put all of that on hold, or any plans that they would have had for hoovering players up on hold. It's popped its head up again now in the last couple of weeks, and the Telegraph are the ones who had the names of Dustin Johnson and Justin Rose, who had been approached. Now, they obviously haven't signed up for it, but they'd apparently been approached with pretty eye-watering sums to come on board this venture. But as McIlroy says there, and McIlroy, don't forget, is speaking from the position of Players' Council Chief for the PGA Tour as well, and the first non-American to be doing so. So he kind of has a stake in all of this, that he has to almost make sure that everybody's in line. But Keith Pelly had said that the European Tour were essentially approached by this group, that they wanted to leverage some sort of buyout, or at least have them involved to a degree. Pelly brought the shoulders down and said no. And similarly, Jay Monahan, the commissioner for the PGA Tour, yesterday was asked Quail Hollow about this thing, and he's the one who said that if anybody does sign up to this, similar to what we heard from Alexander Cheffrin a fortnight ago, they will be excommunicated from the PGA Tour.
Yeah. Johnson and Rose offered $50 million up front to sign. Justin Rose, you ain't earning $50 million any other way, I would think, at this stage of your career, but you do flush the rest of your career down the toilet from the majors' point of view, I would presume, certainly the PGA Tour point of view. They're trying to get 40 of the best players on board to have an 18-event schedule, basically. Mm. That is the plan, but I don't see it getting off the ground.
Something like that. Well, like something like this will happen. You look at, essentially, I'm not saying it started off in the same way, but the WGC has been a bolt-on to the PGA Tour almost for the past decade plus. And you would wonder whether the aim of something like this would be to bump something like the WGC out of the way, or replace that and have just a more expanded version of what the WGC events are. But the fact that you would have players pulling out of the PGA Tour or pulling out of the European Tour to a lesser extent as well would be a pretty ugly look. It brings to mind those kind of splits that you saw in sports. The cricket one, I guess, with one day in the 70s with Packers tours and all that kind of stuff would bring those to mind, and the players involved will be painted in a pretty shoddy light.
Well, they'd be writing themselves out of history, and golf actually is a sport that really prizes its history, you know, and the link between the 2, 3, 4, 5 generations who've really played the game in a big way are often compared and talked about. So there's that. I mean, I'm reading here Phil Mickelson could net $100 million to be one of the ringleaders. Who knows? I mean, the money is big. The money is big, but I suspect it won't get off the ground, to be honest. Dublin Marathon, they're hopeful. So basically, obviously it was cancelled last year, and everybody was offered a refund or guaranteed inclusion in the next version of the race. I think 10% of people took the refund. The other, I guess, 20-odd thousand are itching to get involved in October. I think they've had 35,000 applications. It's one of the great success stories, the Dublin Marathon.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Sadly, a lot of those people applying and a lot of those people holding on to their entries from last year, it looks like they'll be disappointed even if the race does go ahead. As you mentioned, Dublin Marathon organisers remain hopeful that the race can go ahead as planned in October. Last year's event was cancelled on foot of the pandemic, with 25,000 runners due to take part. Those numbers are expected to be significantly reduced should this year's race go ahead, with a final decision due on June 25th, 10,000 to 15,000. Is what they were talking about today as regards potential entries.
Fair enough. Adrian, I can't think, I mean, there's got to be some night soon where we, on a whim, and just spend 2 minutes bullying you to say you'll do a marathon, and then you're left with the consequences.
No.
Is tonight the night? Go on, do it. Hey, Adrian, would you do it for charity?
Come here. On a far more realistic note, Joe, of something to happen, is it not inevitable at some point, I'm suggesting it is inevitable at some point, that somebody with a lot of money who's interested in GAA is going to step in and gather 4 panels of 25 players each and be in a position to pay them a lot of money, and is going to create some sort of professional setup at some point. I'm not saying any point, maybe even in our lifetimes, but at some point somebody with lots of cash and an interest in GAA, like what the
if we're saying the European Super League, wouldn't it be boring to watch the same 12 teams plus five play each other year in, year out? The same four teams. Like, it'd be like just the Interpros again and again and again.
I'm plucking the four out of the sky, obviously, but I mean...
How many panels?
Doing it by province might not be the worst thing in the world, Joe. But no. you would just bring on a whole... Look, I don't know. Four I've just plucked out of the sky. But it's not beyond... I think the conversations like the ESL will have started people, particularly people with money, thinking about things in a far different way. Yeah. Like, just because those players exist under the GAA umbrella now doesn't mean that that always needs to be the case. Ireland is a tiny country, so that makes it... less likely that you have somebody with
that's
that
the, That's the key point here. You're not going to sell a local sport on an international level to the same way that you would the European Super League. The European Super League would have been sold, in football terms, I'm talking about, would have been sold to Asia, to America, and then to all points, obviously, around Europe. The golf, similarly, is going to go in terms of television deals all around the world. You're just simply not going to recoup that kind of money from a GAA venture like that. And you only saw how unpopular... the Sky deal has been among certain tranches of the GAA community, and Micheál Martin only mentioned it last night with Joe that he's no fan of that deal either. So any move towards hoovering up players for provincial teams or anything similar, or trying to engage in some kind of GAA Super League, it's just not in any way imaginable.
I feel like you might be the man to lead it though, Adrian.
Did I mention that at the start?
No,
you'd
be like Niall Quinn. You'd be head of the consortium kind of thing.
Somebody with more cash than sense, I think, would be the key to that. At the very least, it stopped the conversation about me doing the marathon. So
it was a nice sidestep, I have to say. I think you're right, though, in general terms in sport. I would think a lot of venture capitalists, etc., and business people are looking at sports saying, we're entering in a new era here with technology and global reach and... the obvious value of sport. I do think there's probably quite a few organizations thinking we need to batten down the hatch here and get ourselves ready for a hostile type takeover / breakaway. Like golf's in big trouble. I don't know, but they're not going away, this group, and they have a billion. Yeah, I think there are choppy waters ahead.
And I think the power here is with, like, McIlroy's comparison with the European Super League, I think it doesn't really hold water at all, to be honest with you. But I think that the evidence of what happened there, obviously the power was in the fans, in the hands of the fans, whereas the power there is in the hands of the players.
Really. There'll be no protests in the street with golf. Don't worry about that. I don't think fans have a great loyalty to, like, the PGA Tour, even though you would be shooting down meritocracy and, you know, the player coming up through the Corn Ferry Tour and going to Q School and making his way onto the big leagues.
But that, there'd have that's to be some issue. Way but, in and out, Joe.
There? Yeah, there, like, there would be. Yeah, I'd say they'd... I presume they might pluck the best youngsters and offer them money and get them involved. Yeah. The details here are so scant. I was just going to say, though, if you were heading this up, Adrian, if you're to abandon your GAA plan and to head this up instead... I think your first port of call is to find some way for the four majors to be okay with taking players from this breakaway Super League as well. Like, so, if you go to any player and say, come and play this for your 50 million up front, the first question Justin Rose would have asked, I suspect, is, do I get to still play the majors? And if the answer to that becomes yes, and then you get this 18 scheduled tour plus your four majors and you get your 50 million up front and tons of money besides, then golf probably is in a bit of trouble.
Imagine the PGA Tour to kind of ring fence this will be going around the major courses as well, and not only Augusta and the likes, but they will be going around to the likes of Sawgrass, the likes of Quail Hollow, and essentially tying them to exclusivity deals, which would cut the legs from under this completely, because part of the half and half of the joy, obviously, is seeing the players compete, but also seeing them compete against specific courses, and you'd all have your courses that you'd enjoy seeing throughout the year.
You'd get used to new ones in a way as well. I do take the point. I think the majors is the biggie. Everything else is surmountable, I would think. Anyway, sorry, this is like an average episode of Golf Weekly.
I mean, Jesus. You mean a typical episode or an average episode?
Well, let's say no more. Richie, is there any one last story you want to bring us?
I just want to mention Oliver Dingley today securing qualification for his second consecutive Olympic Games. He reached the semifinals of the 3-meter springboard in the FINA Diving World Cup in Japan today. And Sam Bennett, again, continuing his impressive start to 2021, winning the opening stage of the Volta ao Algarve.
Very good. So look, we're done. There was a Roman Grosjean story I wanted to get to. I'm on to season two of Drive to Survive. Totally in on it. We need to do a roundtable chat some evening. I'm so back on the Formula One bandwagon. Oh my God.
I've noticed.
So good. I once gave the ref a lot of abuse. His response was, don't blame me because you're playing shit. It was the best F off I've ever heard, says Kieran in County Wicklow.
I mean, I like it.
It's not bad. And then a lot of people coming in, a la Robbie and Nina here. Lads, Rory sounds like he's 12 months away from full-blown GMAC accent. He's getting there.
Do you know he's what? There. No, there was a start of that quote where he's like, he went full Nordy at the start of it. And then he leveled back off into the mid-Atlantic brogue. But there was a where he kind of went very high-pitched and very Jim McDonald for a moment, but settled back into the GMAC.
Look, a United Ireland. I mean, how could we not? Look at this. Look at reaching the hand across the border there, Richie. Beautiful impression.
The nation once again, John.
Yeah. Okay. Richie McCormack, thank you. Adrian Barry, thank you.
Thanks for coming in, lads.
Philippe Auclair is next. We're talking Chelsea Real Madrid.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.